We're holding in Yerushalmi Tainus, page 30, Ois Davin. So we're in the middle of talking about the subject of much of the beginning of Masechta Tainus is about the fasts that they would do when there wasn't rain and the special Seder of them. One thing the Mishnah mentions is that when they had that they would bring out the Sefer Torah in they would bring out the Aron with the Sefer Torah into the street and they would daven there. They would put ashes on the heads of the Nasi and the Avesin, and they had a whole thing over there that was meant in order to make people feel bad, to break their hearts, so that they would do sincere tshuva. And part of it also, the Mishnah mentions that somebody would say that a zokin shebehen, ideally an elder of the kehila, would say divrei kibushin, would say words that are meant to press on their hearts and to get them to do tshuva. So the Gemara brings Amar Reb Shimon Levi, Steve, the aid yalam in aretz v'goyim. We have in last week's parasha, an aid came up from the earth and watered the whole surface of the earth. So in the simple meaning, aid means a mist. So Hashem made a mist of clouds come up from the earth as evaporation of water, and then from that came clouds from which rain fell. But Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Rish Lakish, is darshaning the word aid also can mean breakage. When it means breakage, it's spelt with a yud, aleph yud dalet. You have, for example, lifnei edehen shalav dikachavim at the beginning of Masechta Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara explains there that the word edehen, which means their chogas, is a word meaning their breakage. In other words, they deserve to be broken for the Avodah Zarah they worship. So Rish Lakish is saying over here, it means ola shever milamata, when breakage comes from below. In other words, when the Jewish people's hearts are broken and they're doing sincere tshuva, then miyadag shamim yodim, then right away the rain falls. So the aid, yalam in aretz, the aid, the breaking, comes up from the ground, the surasid of the sata, then immediately you have that rain falls and the whole earth is watered. Amr Berechia, so the Berechia says in a similar vein, Ksiv, from the other end of the Torah, here you have from Parshas Bereishis, now the Berechia brings a similar thing from near the end of the Torah, from Parshas Hazinu. Ksiv, Yarif Kamotu Likhi, Moshe Rabbeinu says, my teaching should Yarif like the rain. So in the simple meaning, Yarif means to drip. But he understands Yarif as also Meloshen Oref, the back of the neck. Kofu open the tshuva, when the Jewish people bend the neck for tshuva. Now you often have in Tanakh, there's often the metaphor used. We also use it in davening, a kshei oref, am kshei oref, who, for example, that people are stiff-necked and stubborn, like they can't even turn their head to look back and see, is what I did correct? So now when they do bend their neck to the yoke of the Eibishter, and they're willing to look back and see, you know what, we haven't been acting right, miyadag shamim yodim, then right away rain falls. So yarif, then the result is kamoto, that rain comes. So the Gemara tells Reb Berechia Obed Tlas Esther Tanion. One time in Reb Berechia's times, there was a drought. So they had the 13 fasts in succession, as the Mishnayos describe, where they have first a set of three on Monday, Thursday, and Monday. Then they wait a little bit and see if rain has fallen. If not, then they have the next set. And if not, then they have the next seven. And each one is more severe than the previous one. So altogether, the Mishnah describes the maximum you ever make for a lack of rain is 13 fasts. So here, Reb Berechia had gone through with his kehila, with all 13 of these fasts, v'lenochis mitra, and all that time rain didn't fall. And on top of that, there was sefer osa goyval. Then on top of that, after they had done all these 13 fasts, then a plague of locusts hit. Over omakumeha, instead of berechia, comes to give them a drosha, again, with the idea he realizes they obviously haven't done proper tshuva yet, which is why the Eibishter is hitting them with one disaster after another. So he was going to tell them a speech to get them to do tshuva. He says in front of them, Achinon, our brothers, Chamu mad inun avdin, look at what we're doing. Loy dohi de nevia makantolon, aren't we doing exactly the kind of thing that the Navi criticizes us for? Namely, you have a couple of psukim. In the Navi Micha, one of Tereyasa, that goes as follows. First, let's read the words of the pasuk as they are, and then Reb Berechia is going to douche in them phrase by phrase. Al hara kapayim lehetiv, people are doing for evil purposes. They're taking with their hands and expecting to get good out of it, like they're bribing, figuring that they can get favors that way. The minister, the government minister, is asking for a bribe, and the judge is also involved in the bribery, in the payment. The great person, the great leader, meaning even maybe the Talmud Chacham, is speaking what he wants. Havas nafshei, Rashi explains on the pasuk over there, meaning something like what he wants to happen in his desire. Vayabsuha, and they make it into an avoice, into like a thickly braided thing, like you have three people involved over here. It's very hard to untangle it. Then the next pasuk continues, tovam kachedek, their good ones are like thorns. Chedek can mean most of them before Shimon the Pasuk explain that chedek, whatever, is a type of thorn. There's also an explanation that it means like a crack in a wall. Yoshum Mesucha, the ones who are straight, who are supposed to be the straightest among them, are also like a Mesucha, like a hedge of thorns. In other words, once you get tangled up with them, it's very difficult to untangle yourself. The day that you expected your visitation, your remembrance from Hashem in a negative way is going to come. Now is going to be their end. So the Navi is saying, in short, that the whole society, or a good part of it, is corrupt, and therefore the Eibishter is going to punish them. So now the Berechia uses those two psukim as the basis for his drosha to the people. By the way, there's a Gemara, the Bavli in Erevin brings the flip side of it, that the Gemara mentions over there that a min one time says to, I think, Rav Chanina, he says, you tzaddikim, you see that your own Navi compares you to no better than thorns and thistles, dangerous things. And Rav Chanina explains to him, no, that's not what the pasuk, the deeper meaning of the pasuk is that the tzaddikim are like thorns to the Rishoyim, that the Eibishter said, the Eibishter, when the Eibishter judges the Rishoyim, he says, why weren't you like the tzaddikim of your time? And therefore they wind up in Gehenem, and Yoshim and Mesucha, the straight people, the upright people, protect us like a hedge protects a field. But in the simple meaning of the pasuk, it's meant as a negative thing, and Rav Berechia was taking it in that way also. So he says, when the pasuk says for evil, they're stretching out their hands expecting to get good, meaning exactly that. So it means like here we're doing badly to one another with our hands, whether it means people are hitting each other, whether it means that people are stealing from each other, whatever kinds of avedas that are done with the hands. And we're asking for goodness from Eibishter. What kind of fasts are these? He continues, that Sar Shoyl, the minister is asking, what is he asking? Where's a good place to get bribes? And when the pasuk continues, the judge is also part, is also on the take. The judge says, fine, shalom leva, shalom loch. You pay me a bribe this time, and I'll judge in your favor. And next time I'll pay you, and you'll judge in my favor. So they have a whole quid pro quo thing going on over here. Any resemblance to certain government policies nowadays is not accidental. Anyway, v'agodol dover havas nafshoy. The pasuk continues. The great one speaks what he wants. Where what he wants is desire. Who v'yabesuha, and they make it thick, which means avdua avia. They make it thick, like they make it. They're all in this as a thick bundle, which is very hard to undo. Of dua clear dechoven, they make it like a braid of averus. Like a braid is very hard to undo, and it's very strong and not so easy to snap. Al derech, like you have in the positive sense. The pasuk says va'achuta meshulosh loybim heiri yinosik, that a triple thread is much harder to snap. So here it's the other way around. They have like this triple, they have this triple bond between the different corrupt leaders, and the result is that it's very hard to undo it. So you have to ask who is going to cut it, who's going to cut through that rope and then get things back to and then get things back to normal. The problem is, as the next pasuk continues, tovam kachedek, the good ones are like a chedek, meaning tova de behind keilin chidkaya. Even the best, the ones who are supposed to be the best in the kehillah, are no better than the thorns. So you expect, you could say, in other words, they have the sharpness, they have the ability to cut through these ropes of corruption, but they themselves are like thorns, which make things even worse, and you try to tangle with them, and you end up the worst for it. Yoshum Mesucha, the straight ones are no better than a hedge. Same thing. Yashur Debahin, Kilin Sukaya. So the ones who are supposed to be the straightest among them, the most upright and honest, are like a hedge of thorns, where again, it's very dangerous to tangle with him. He continues with the lashon of the pasuk. The day that you expect kudos chaba, instead your punishment comes. Meaning, Rebbe Rachi is saying, yom shitzipinu l'ravacha. Here we were expecting that we're finally going to have relief after all our fasts and our tefillos and everything. We're expecting the Eibishter is finally going to grant us rain. Instead, baalenu goyvai. Instead, now we have locusts on top of that. So he finishes off with the pasuk. The end of the pasuk, atatiya mevuchosam, now is going to be mevuchosam. So in the simple meaning of the pasuk, mevuchosam means their confusion. Like now, after all this, is when they're going to be confused and realize they have what they've done wrong. But he understands mevuchosam meloshen bechia, meloshen crying. So he says, min goid inun baichan oy kaivin, when the people are crying or when they're hurt. In other words, he's explaining mevuchosam kind of has a double meaning. It could be meloshen bechia and also meloshen ke'ev. They're crying from pain. When people are ready to actually cry out to the Eibishter and to feel the pain and to feel how bad things have gotten, that's when the Eibishter will have a rachmanas on us. Sure enough, vachon, that caused everybody to cry from his teuchacha, the nochas mitra, and rain fell. Okay. Further on, the Mishnah mentions that a typical drasha. The Mishnah gives an example that the Gadol Shebehem would mention. For example, look at what happened with Anshi Ninveh. We just read it on Yom Kippur a couple of weeks back. So here they did a massive tshuva movement when Yonah came and threatened the city is going to be overturned. And what does the pasuk say? It doesn't say that the Eibishter saw a sakam vestan nisam, their sackcloth and their fasting, even though the pasuk does describe they did all those things. It says vayara lekimas maaseim, the Eibishter saw their actions, kishovam midak mara, that they did tshuva from their evil ways. So therefore, the Zokin Shebehem uses that as part of his Dinosha to say that in the same way, the Eibishter is not so interested in your sackcloth and your fasting. What he's interested in is your sincere tshuva. So Amar of Shimon Levi, so Rish Lakish points out, you should realize, tshuva sharamos osu anshe Ninveh. The people of Ninveh actually did a trickster kind of tshuva. In other words, now we don't mean, as Yosef points out, they did do an honest tshuva in the sense they did actually, as the pasuk goes on to say, they did return us a chomas hasheva kapeim, all the stolen goods that they had stolen and everything. But what he means is, in other words, that they're using like a trick in order to, so to speak, to force the Eibishter into forgiving them. The Bavli mentions this also in the sugya as well. We learned about it in Ein Yaakov at the time. So Ma'os, so what they do, Rab Chuna b'shem Rab Shimon Chalafta, hemidu agolim mibifnim, they took some calves and put them in the inside of a building, the imaseyam mibachutz, and kept the mothers of those calves on the outside of the building, or similarly, siochim mibifnim v'imaseyam mibachutz, and they did the same thing with the baby horses and the mother horses. So each one, the babies are making noises, mooing and neighing and whatever, missing their mothers, and the mothers miss their babies. Amrin, so now the people of Ninveh were saying to Hashem, if you don't have rachmanos on us, less than merachmin aleihem, then we're not going to have rachmanos on them either. So like, so to speak, they forced the Eibishter's hand. Thus, you have a pasuk expresses this idea in connection with the plague of locusts that hit in Yoel's times, which we've learned about a couple of times in Ein Yaakov. So you have Yoel has the expression manencha behema. Look how much even the animals are sighing. Navoichu edrei baka v'gomer, and the herds of cattle are confused. So simple pshat is, in other words, because there's no grain, there's no grass and no hay for anything. So like they're sighing and confused, like we're like why aren't our masters feeding us? But we understand, in other words, that it means that. In that case, then the Navi was saying that the Navi was saying to the people, you even if you're not deserving of that, the Eibishter should help you. At least he'll help you in the schus of the animals, because what did they do wrong? So the same way, the people of Ninveh are using that kind of concept, so to speak, to force Hashem's hand to have rachmanos on them and not destroy the city. Amr of Acha. Ba'avi Avdin Kain. So Rav Acha points out, you know, that kind of thing where the pasuk describes where they put sackcloths on the animals. So they do that kind of thing. He says they do that kind of thing in Arabia, where sometimes they put sackcloth on the animals. As the pasuk says, v'yiskasu sakam adam v'abehema v'yikru el elokim b'chazka. They should put all the people and the animals should wear sackcloth and cry out to Hashem strongly. So Rav Acha is pointing out, you should know, if you go to Arabia, you can find sometimes they do that kind of thing as well, where they put sackcloths on the animals, whether for mourning, whether for protection, whatever it is. Eitz Yosef points out also, the point is that the previous drosha about them keeping the mothers and the baby and the mother animals and baby animals apart, you might explain it that It might be explained differently. That when it says v'iskasu sakim ha'odom, you have to divide it up. V'iskasu sakim ha'odom. The people should clothe themselves in sackcloth, which is the typical thing that you find in Tanakh that people would do in times of trouble. As far as v'abehema, not necessarily they're going to put sackcloth on the animals. Who does that? Rather, it means they're going to hide v'iskasu. They're going to hide the mothers and the babies from each other, as Rav Chunah explained. Whereas on the other hand, Rav Acha is saying, don't be so surprised that they put sackcloths on the animals. You can go to Arabia and you can find them do that kind of thing sometimes. Okay, so the Pasuk says they called out to Hashem b'chozga, strongly. Mao b'chozga, what's that expression in b'chozga, which implies in the Bavli, when it brings this also, Rashi explains over there, b'chozga suggests like with an unassailable argument, like with an argument that Hashem, so to speak, can't refute. So what kind of argument are they making? Omer of Shimon Chalafta, Chatsufa Notzach L'Ksheir. Even in the way it works among a boss of a dom, you often find that the Chutzpanyak wins out over the kosher. So, for example, you have a Kosev explains, it means, for example, if you have two women and one of them is more of a chutzpanyak and the other one is an ishak shero, who's more of an onav, very often the chutzpanyaka is going to win out over the kshera because she has more of the breakite to press her case. And the same way, more generally, a person may sometimes have the chutzpah and the breitkeit to ask for something that really he doesn't even deserve. And the kosher, Hashem, for example, who is the honor, will give it to, will so to speak, give in and give it to him. So they say, kol sheken shetevasa shalolam. That's even when you have a regular thing between, a regular argument between boss of Adam, how much more so over here, where it's for the good of the whole world that Hashem should have, rachmanos on us. So that's the chozka, like they're using an argument, like almost like they're using the Ebishter, the way the Ebishter created the natural tendencies of people in the world, almost like they're using that to win out their argument against Hashem. So the pasuk continues that the king makes an announcement, v'yashuvu ish midarkei hara, every person should go back from their evil ways, and v'nachomas asher b'chapeihem, and from the robbery that is in their hands. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan says, what's this in their hands? The robbery could be anywhere. It means what they actually had in their hands, they returned as part of this trova. But they didn't necessarily return any stolen goods that were in their boxes, that were in their closets or boxes or cabinets. They didn't necessarily return. And nevertheless, it was enough of a trova that the Ebishter accepted and deferred their punishment. The Bavli actually says almost what seems to be almost the opposite. The Bavli says that you have a case where a person might have stolen a beam and built it into his house, where technically you have the Ikra Din, he would have to tear down the house and return the beam. The Chachamim made a takona. It's called takonas hashavim, that instead of that, then a person is going to be very unlikely to do tshuva, so they allow him to return the monetary value of it. Here, the Bavli mentions the people of Nineveh would actually go that extra mile, and they would actually tear down their house to return the beam. So on the face of it, that seems kind of the opposite of what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, that they tried to get away with as little as possible. So, okay, maybe there's some way to be miyash of them. Maybe as far as tearing down their house to return the beam, where like they can make a big public spectacle of it and everybody's going to be impressed, that they would do. But to go and take something from their cabinet where they figure they can always claim that it wasn't there, maybe they would, maybe they'd try to get away with that.
Show offs,
basically, yeah. All right. Ksiv, now in this connection, the pasuk says in Yoel, again, you have the whole section in the Navi Yoel where he describes the plague of locusts that happened in his times and the massive gathering of tshuva that they had to cry and plead with the Ebishter and to do tshuva. So Yoel has the expression, and the Mishnah also quotes that the Zokin Shebehem, when he says the Divrei Kibushim, he would mention the following pasuk, the Kiru Lovavchem Ba'al Begdechem, tear your hearts and don't tear your clothes. V'shuvu al Hashem alekeichem, and return to Hashem your God, ki chanun v'rachem hu, because he's merciful and kind, he's gracious and merciful. So what's this v'kiru l'vavchem ba'al b'gdechem? So in the simple sense, it means exactly that. Tear up the evil that's in your hearts. Instead of doing b'chitzonius, that you're just going to tear your clothes in sadness for the famine, instead tear your hearts, tear the evil out of your heart, the Yetzirah that's in your hearts. One thing that's bothering the Gemara, though, is where do we find specifically that for a drought, there's an inyan to tear your clothes? For a mess, Rachman al-Tlan, a person tears his clothes. For other things like that, where do we find specifically for a famine? So Amar Rebbe Shimon Levi, it means also that the Navi is telling them, Im karatim levavchem b'tshuva, if you rip your hearts in tshuva, if you sincerely do tshuva and rip the bad ways out of your heart, einatim kodem b'gdechem, loyal b'nechem, loyal b'neisechem, then you won't have to rip your clothes, Rachman al-Tzan, for the death of a son or a daughter. Ela al Hashem alekechem, rather you'll be able to trust in the Eibishter. Lama, and why can you trust in the Eibishter? Who says maybe it's too late? No, ki chanun v'nachum hu, as the Navi continues, Hashem is gracious and merciful. Erech ha'payim, he's patient, v'rav chesed and full of chesed, v'nicham ala ra, and Hashem is, and Hashem will regret, so to speak, the evil that he was planning to do, and so to speak, change his mind. So therefore, in other words, you always know there's another chance. In the mornings, actually, now we're currently in the middle of before Shacharis. We sit together a few minutes and learn a piece of a Maimach Siddur. Currently, we're learning something from Maimonim Kunshreis in Beis, a Maimer of the Friedrich Rebbe Shuva Yisrael, where he brings from several different Mefarshim. When it says Ki Imcha Slicha Laman Tivore, you have to ask, what does it mean? Hashem forgives, and therefore he's going to be feared. On the face of it, isn't it the other way around? If Hashem forgives, a person is more likely to say, okay, I can get away with it over and over. So a number of them, if he brings that Friedrich Rebbe brings, that a number of them Mefarshim explain, it's something along the lines of what it's saying in the Gemara over here. Without the Eibishter forgiving, a person might figure, you know what, I did Averus, forget about it, I'm a goner, I may as well live it up, like we learned in Chagiga about Acher. When we find that the Eibishter is forgiving and merciful and so forth, then a person realizes, you know what, I do have another chance, so it motivates him to do tshuva. There's, by the way, a story in that connection with one of the Talmudim of the Mizrachi Magid. I can't now remember which one it was, where they asked him, what did he accomplish? I think it was Reb Mendel Horodoker. I think, where they asked him at one point, what did he accomplish in a certain town? He says, I came there and I found that the clothes were torn and the hearts were whole, and I switched it around, like the Gemara is saying over here. The Gemara continues, Rab Shmuel bar Nachman b'shem Rabbi Yechanan, erech af ein ksiv kan. Now, it doesn't say in the Pasuk that Hashem is erech af. Now, the word af all by itself can mean anger. So erech af by itself would mean that Hashem is slow to anger. Erech apayim, but it's apayim in the plural, which means there's two ways in which Hashem is patient. Marich ruchay ad shal yigbe. First of all, Hashem is patient and waits before he even starts collecting and dispensing the punishment. And number two, his chaligbos, even once Hashem has begun with the punishment, marich ruchoi v'goyva, Hashem is patient with the dispensing of the punishment itself and does it only a little bit at a time so as not to completely destroy the person or the kehila. So that's erech hapayim in two ways. So the Gemara continues, something that we also learned, that we learned a couple of weeks back in Yerushalmi Shkolim. Omer Rav Chanina, man de omer de Rachmana Vatron, a person who thinks that Hashem is willing to let things go. Like, in other words, I did an Avera, okay, big deal. Hashem is willing to overlook it. Yivatron b'nei ma'oi, his kishkis deserve to be let loose. Which can mean that he would have loose bowels. It can also mean, we talked about then, that one of the Mefarshim explains, based on a Gemara in Chulin that talks about how the kishkes have to be arranged in precisely certain positions in the body, and if they're not, then an animal can't live with them switched around. See, Yivatron b'nei me'oi means his kishkes will come out and they won't be able to be put back in the proper way, and therefore he won't have long to live, Rachman al-Islam. The point is, a person shouldn't think that way. You should realize the Eibishter is patient, but ultimately he collects what's coming to him. In other words, a person shouldn't think, okay, I did an Aveda, big deal. Hashem is a nice guy, he'll let it slide. No, Hashem is not letting it slide. Hashem is patient in giving you a chance to do tshuva, but there has to be some kind of consequence, either tshuva or some other kind of consequence. We talked about there something that Eitz Yosef brings from Sifrei Musar in that connection, because every Avera creates a pagam in the world, and therefore something has to happen with that pagam. Either it has to be cleaned up with tshuva or with whatever. But that's the idea. In other words, a person shouldn't just think that Hashem is mevater, Hashem doesn't care, basically. That would be very dangerous, because then a person can think that he can get away with all kinds of Averas. Amar Rav Levi, so Rav Levi says further, let's understand this word erech hapayim, mau erech hapayim, rachik ragiz. It means that Hashem keeps anger far away from him. The anger that Hashem uses as his shliach to punish people, Hashem keeps it, so to speak, far away from him. Like it's not available, so to speak, it's not available to Hashem at a moment's notice. Moshel Melech Shoyle Shnei Legionis Koshin. So it's like a king who had two very strong legions where he has them available anytime that they're so their job is, among other things, whenever there's a rebellion, whenever people are rebelling or uprising against the king, then their job is to go and put down the rebellion. Omer HaMelech, in Dorim Him Imi B'Medina, but the king says to himself, if these two legions stay with me in the capital city, Achsha B'nei HaMedina Machisim Oisi, what's going to happen if the people in the city anger me, if they act in a disrespectful way? Right away, these two legions, they're trained for this kind of thing. They're going to go wipe out the whole city. So the king thinks to himself, I'm going to send these two legions further away. This way, if the people in the town and the people in the capital city are angering me, by the time, it's going to take time to send for these two legions, it's going to take time for them to come. Meanwhile, the people in the town will realize that they did wrong, and they'll come and appease me, and then ask mechilah, and then I'll be able to accept their appeasement, their apologies and their whatever else they would do for having acted wrongly.
The nimshal
is so the same way the there are two malachi chabala, two malachim of destruction called af and chema, which are various aspects of Hashem's anger. Imhem dorim imi kan, so Hashem is saying, so to speak, if they live together with me, achshav yisro machisim moisi, then whenever the Jewish people anger me, v'hem omdim aleim amachal moisam, then af and chema are immediately going to go and do their job that they're trained to do, that the Eibishter created them for, and destroy them. Ela harayani meshalcham derech rechoyka, so Hashem says, I'm keeping af and chema far away from me. Shem machisim moisi yisrael, if the Jewish people anger me, by the time it's going to take time to send for them, and it's going to take time for them to show up, and meanwhile, the Jewish people have chances to tshuva, and I'll be able to accept their tshuva. The Bavli expresses this in a different way. There's a Gemara, I think, in Brachos that says that various malachim are able to fly with a certain number of flaps of their wings. So like Malach Michal is able to traverse the whole world with one flap of his wings, and then Malach Gavriel with two. I don't remember all the numbers that it says over there, but the point is, in other words, that you have the Malach HaMavis, for example, it takes generally eight flaps of his wings to get me so far the Mad Sofa. So like, so to speak, there's a built-in delay so he doesn't come right away on the spot and carry out the sentence.
Getting the upgrade,
the
F-35.
What?
He's not getting
the upgrade. Well, more to the point, in other words, that he's not taking a direct flight, Lamazogan. Yeah. It's a safety mechanism, basically. Ahu dichtiv, thus you have the Pasuk expresses this idea. The Pasuk describes the destructive forces in context. The Pasuk is describing about Poras Umodai, who are going to come to destroy the nation of Bavel, but the kingdom of Bavel. But we see in that Pasuk also, we still have this idea that the destructive forces are described, Me'eretz Merchok, they're coming from a far distance, Mikzeh HaShemayim, from the ends of the heavens, the Gomer. So, there we're talking about in connection with Bavel, where the Eibishter doesn't necessarily give them that break, but the point is we see this idea that the Eibishter keeps the destructive forces, so to speak, at arm's length, so they're not available on the spot.
It's like the missiles of the Iranians.
Yeah. Yeah, we have enough time to react to them. Yeah. Not only that, Rabbi Yitzchok says not just that Hashem keeps them, so to speak, far away, but he also locks up in front of them. So like now you have to kavyochol as if like fumble for the keys and go and unlock it. You have another pasuk also describing the downfall of Bavel. Pasuk Hashem es otsore. Hashem has opened up his treasury. Vayotzes kleizamoy, and he took out from there the tools of his anger, the weapons of his anger. And then in Bavli Chagiga, we learned about that one meaning of that is there's one of the seven heavens that contains the weapons that Hashem uses to punish people. But we said over there that they have locks, that they have locks and doors based on this pasuk. But now we're saying, in other words, that these Malachi Chabala themselves are kept behind doors. Ad du posach, so as he's opening, du is like duhu in Bavli. A lot of times a hey drops out in Yerushalmi. Ad du posach, as he's opening one door, ad du torich, and by the time he closes the other door, rachmoi krivin. Meanwhile, Hashem's rachmanus comes closer. and therefore it has time to overtake before the Malachi Kabbalah are let loose. So further, the Gemara says in this connection, Toni B'Shem Rav Meir, here's another pasuk that expresses this idea as well. The Navi Micha says, Kine Hashem Yotze Mimkoymai. Hashem is coming out of his place. Now, what place? Meloi Chalaretz Kvodi. Hashem doesn't have a place. So Yotze Lo Min Midah L'Midah means Hashem is, so to speak, going out from one Midah to another. Yotze Lo Min Midas Hadin. Hashem is leaving the so to speak, the space of Midas Hadin, or bother the Midas Harachmim. Now, Yisrael is coming to a Midas Harachmim on the Jewish people. There's a medrash that expresses the same kind of thing in a similar vein. It says, for example, on Rosh Hashanah, the Eibishter sits on the Kisei Sholdin, and then when we blow shofar, then that the Eibishter gets up, then he gets up from the Kisei Sholdin and sits on the Kisei Sholachim. So all of these are meant to express the idea, in other words, that the Eibishter is patient and he wants as much as possible to exercise Midas Harachim towards us. Getting back to the matter of fasts and tshuva that they do when there's no rain or when there's other tzaras. Omer Rav kol tainis she'en nasas ketikna. Whenever you have a tainis that's not done properly, where again the people are not doing proper tshuva, Aloha kosev Omer, the posuk criticizes such a fast and says nosna olay b'kola. Hashem says they've put their voices up against me. Al kain sinei siha, therefore I hate her. So like, in other words, they're davening loudly and saying anenu and so on and so forth. But if they're not accompanying it with what a fast is supposed to be, then Eibishter says, I don't like that kind of thing. Further on this topic of getting back to this topic of Hashem, so to speak, changing his mind from one midah to another and going from midas adin to midas arachmim. Ksiv loy ish keil v'yichazev. Bilam says in one of his nevuos, Hashem is not a man that he should lie. When Hashem says something, he's going to do it. Now, you have the pasuk goes like this, Lo ish keil v'yichazev, Hashem is not a man that he should lie, uven adam v'yisnecham, on the simple meaning of the pasuk, it means Hashem is not a person that he should change his mind. Ahu omer v'lo yaseh, what Hashem, could it be that Hashem would say something and he wouldn't do it? V'dibur v'lo yikimena, could Hashem speak something and not accomplish it? So in the simple meaning of the pasuk, Bilam is saying, since Hashem has decided to bench the Jewish people and not to curse them, then I have no ability against that. Here the Gemara is going to darsh in the pasuk as if it's saying that sometimes Hashem does change his mind. In fact, you can read the pasuk Lo ish keil v'yichazev uven adam v'yisnecham. You can read, for example, the pasuk uven adam v'yisnecham. In the simple meaning, the word loy at the beginning of the pasuk goes on the next part as well. Evan Ezra, and for example, calls that moshech atzmei v'acher imoy. The word loy goes on both parts of the sentence. But the Gemara is going to darshan as if it's saying, uven adam v'yisnecham, that Hashem can allow himself to change his mind because of a person. So Rav Shmuel bar Nachman v'Rabbanan. So how do we understand the pasuk? So Rav Shmuel bar Nachman and the Chachamim disagree on it. Rav Shmuel bar Nachman Omar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu oimer lasis loy toiva. When Hashem decides, when Hashem says that he's going to do good for a person or for the Jewish people collectively, loyish kelvi yichazim. Then you have the part of the pasuk. Hashem is not a man that he should lie. If Hashem said he's going to do good, it's definitely going to happen. But omer lasis ra. But if Hashem says he's going to do something bad to a person, then as the pasuk said, as the pasuk continues, hahu omer v'lo yase. Hashem has said it, but he's not going to do it. In other words, it's not a rhetorical question. Hahu omer v'lo yase. It's a statement. There is a time that a woman of Elayasa, the dibber, and then Hashem will speak, and he doesn't actually make it happen. Because Hashem will, so to speak, change his mind, and because the person did tshuva, or because Hashem is having rachmanus on him, or being patient with him, or whatever the idea is. We know this comes up lahalocha as well. When a Navi says a nevuah that something good's going to happen, it has to come true. And if not, then he's a Navi sheker. Whereas if he says that something bad is going to happen and doesn't happen, doesn't mean anything, because it can mean the people did tshuva, or it can mean that the Eibishter decided to be more patient or whatever. You find a dialogue like that that Amman brings. You find a dialogue like that between Yumi Anovi and Hananya ben Azur. Hananya ben Azur, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, was originally a true Navi. But then he became a false Navi. Of course, he plagiarized the Nevuah of Yirmiyah, and then he became an out-and-out false Navi. So, and he's saying good nevuah, that within 2 years, the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash that have already been taken to Babel are going to be returned, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to have his downfall and so forth. And Yumi says to him, let me explain something to you. I'm saying nevuah about bad things that are going to happen, the churban, the galus. If those don't come true, it doesn't mean that I'm a false Navi. It means Hashem changed his mind for one reason or another. But you're saying nevuah for good. If they don't come true, then we know you're a false Navi. Anyway. So that's Reb Shmuel bar Nachman's way of understanding the pasuk. Lo yishkel v'yachaziv when it comes to doing good things, but how who yasev v'dibur v'lo yikimena when Hashem has decided on something bad. V'rabbanan amri the Chum learned the pasuk different. Lo ishhu sha'osad dvarav shokeo kelo einon. Isn't there a person who made Hashem's words as if they weren't? Namely, when Moshe says to Hashem, Loma Hashem, Yechra Apcha Bamecha, Hashem, why is your anger going to flare against your people? In other words, here Hashem is saying, he's threatening to wipe out the Jewish people, and who stops him from that is Moshe Rabbeinu, a boss of Adam. So in other words, that part of the pasuk we understand rhetorically. Loy ish kale, isn't there a case where there was a man who stood up against Hashem v'chazev and caused that Hashem is, so to speak, not telling the truth, that what Hashem said is not going to happen? Uven Adam b'yisnecham, and when the pasuk continues, a human being that he would regret. Loy ben Amram, who isn't it? None other than Ben Amram, Moshe Rabbeinu. The word Adam particularly means a tzaddik v'kosher. So you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who himself is a great tzaddik and is the son of a great tzaddik Amram. Who made Hashem, so to speak, regret and retract what he was planning to do, as the pasuk says, that Hashem regretted the evil that he was going to do to his people. So the Rabbanan understand the pasuk. Even the loyish kel v'yachaziv. In other words, so in other words, Shmuel bar Nachman is taking all of it as statements. Loyish kel v'yachaziv when it's good. When it's for bad, the Rabbanan are learning the whole pasuk as a series of rhetorical questions. Loy ish kel v'chazev. Wasn't there a case where a man, Moshe Rabbeinu, caused Hashem, so to speak, to lie? Uven Adam v'yisnecham. Wasn't there a case where Ben Adam caused Hashem to regret what he was going to do? So yeah. Either way, the point is, in other words, that al derech like tzaddik goes of Hakadosh Baruch Hu makayim, or more like the, like as the Gemara phrases it, that Hashem says I make a gzera, and then the tzaddik comes in as mevatel. Amar Rabba Bohu. So in this connection, Rabba Bohu points out im yom lecha adam. Here's another way of understanding the pasuk. Im yom lecha adam keil ani. If a person is going to say to you, I'm a god, and we have a number of examples of it in history. We have Chiram Melech Tzur. We have Paroi. In later times, you have Yoshka. Anyway, mechaziv, who you should know, he's lying. So that's another meaning of loy ish kael v'yachaziv. If loy ish kael, a person cannot be a god, and if he claims that he is v'yachaziv, then you know he's lying. Ben Adam ani, and if he tells you I'm a Ben Adam, I'm a son of a distinguished person. Also soifo litos by, in the end he's going to regret it, because you're going to find out that he's not what he's claiming to be. He's not a son of any great person at all. Shani Ola Shamayim, and if he claims I'm going to be able to go up to Shamayim, like the Dora Flogger of this week's parasha, then you should know, as the pasuk continues, he may say that, but he's not going to do it. He may try to speak it, but he's not going to be able to accomplish it. In other words, Rabbi Bohu is understanding yet another layer of meaning in this pasuk, that although the whole pasuk is not talking about what Hashem does via the Jewish people, but rather about what a person claims that he's Hashem and that he has all these great capabilities, the Eibishter is going to put him in his place and show that he has no such capabilities at all. Further on in the perek, it starts talking about, you have the extra six brachas. We learned about it in the Bavli and Tainus as well, about the extra six brachas that they would say on these fast days between Re'ena Vanyenu and Rafa'enu. Nowadays we say Anenu in that same position, and the Chazan says Anenu in that same position in Shemoneh Esrei. And each of the brachas ends with Misha Ona, so we say Misha Ona to so and so, who Yana Eschem Hashem should answer us as well. We say We have a paragraph in Slichus that takes that and expands it much further. Mishana Lavrom of Inamahamriya, Mishana Yitzchak Penekshin Agadagam Azbeach. And the Mishnah only has seven of them, one extra that's added to the A, and six extra ones. You also have the Piyut that we say Yom Kippur afternoon in Mincha, Keil No Rafana, where each stanza of it also ends with something like that. Anenu Kshanisa Lavrom of Inamahamriya, Anenu Kshanisa Lavasenu Ayam, so on and so forth. Anyway, so one of them is Mishanas Avisenu Al Yamsuf, the Ebishter who answered our ancestors by the Yamsuf should answer our tefillas today. So in that connection, the Gemara brings, which are the famous Medrash, about what happened before Kriyas Yamsuf, when everybody is worried about the Mitzrayim are about to overtake them. Arba Kitas Nasu Avisenu Al Yam. Our ancestors divided up into four groups by the Yamsuf. Achas Emeres Nipur La Yam. One says we should fall into the sea. Va'achas Emeres Nachsu La Mitzrayim. The other group says we should return to Mitzrayim or give up. Va'achas Emeres Nasi Imon Mochama. Another one says let's fight against them. Va'achas Emeres Taveach Kineg them. And the fourth one says we'll cry and shout out against them. It can mean shout, like to scare them. It can mean shout in davening. So the ones who are about to jump into the sea, Moshe tells them, stand firm and you'll see Hashem's salvation. Moshe tells them, you've seen Mitzrayim today, but you're never going to see them again. You think you're going to fight against the Mitzrayim, Hashem is going to fight on your behalf. And the ones who said, we're going to cry out against them. So Moshe says to them, you be quiet and Hashem will do it on your behalf. There's a famous sikha in Chelek Gimel for Beshalach where the Rebbe analyzes the deeper meaning behind these four groups. Each of them had an idea in Avoida. Each of them has a degree of Kabbalah soul, but they're taking it in different ways. The ones who are saying Nipala Yam are saying basically we're going to throw ourselves into the Yam of Torah and ignore the whole world. And Moshe is telling them that's not what the Ebishter wants from you. The ones who are saying Nachzol Mitzrayim are saying we're going to have to give up. Look, we live in a Gashmiistic world. We're going to have to give up and accept that the Goyish world, that the Gashmiistic world has its limitations and whatever. And Moshe tells them that's not what they wish to put you in the world for. The ones who are saying Nase Mon Mochama are saying we're going to fight against them. Moshe says that's all fine and good, but you have more than Mochama to do. You have to bring a course into the world, not just fight against the evil that's in the world. And then connect them. We're going to daven. Moshe tells them that's all fine and good, but you need more than davening. You need ma'aseh b'poel. And so ultimately, the idea is, in other words, you need something beyond mesiras nefesh. You need something beyond kabbalah soil. Even you need kabbalah soil, but you also need to be working b'koyach atzman. And that's Moshe tells them that Moshe tells them you go into the yamsuf at Hashem's command, and he's going to and then he's going to do the rest for you.
Back in the window with
his
stick.
Oh, the guy couldn't make his rent, and then the potter.
And then they called the Baal Shem Tov. So they asked Baal Shem Tov, why did
you
knock on the
stick? Yeah, I'm not familiar. Okay, all right. Anyway, okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola Chavav Tishrei. When Chazal describe the. When Chazal describe the Yemos HaMashiach, so they go on at great length and describe all the gashmiistic good that's gonna happen in those times, including that on the day a person plants, on that day he's gonna produce fruit, and Asida Eretz Yisrael Shetotzi Gul Skoris, the Eretz Yisrael is gonna produce ready to eat loaves of bread and ready to eat clothing. So a deeper meaning in that is that in Yemos HaMashiach, Avoida is going to be in a way of Chakika Me'ever El Ever, like the writing on the Luchos that was carved through and penetrated through from one side to the other. And it'll penetrate and be poil on all of a person's koichas and everything that a person does, and really into everything, into every entity and every mitzios in the world. So therefore, at that point, there's not going to be like this. Nowadays, you have a person does his part to plant, and it takes months for the crop to grow. Now, la'osid lover, you won't have that. The flow of alakos will immediately come, but the same day as a person plants, it'll produce peiros because the gashmias will be united with its shodash and mocker, with it, which is the dvar habayim.
Oh, yeah.
Halachas. We're in the middle of dealing with halachas of a fire on Shabbos, Rachman al-Flan. So Sfarim, you're allowed to save from a fire or a flood or anything like that. Those kind you're allowed to eat, though, unlike some of the other things that I mentioned earlier, for example, food and things like and clothing, where you can only take them to a place where you have a proper Eruv with you. You would be allowed even to take it to a chotzer or a mavui where you didn't make an Eruv chatzeris before Shabbos, as long as you have up the proper Surah Pesach or Lechi or Kodo or whatever it takes, as long as it's enclosed in such a way where you could have made an Eruv chatzeris before Shabbos. So in other words, let's say, to put it in terms of our houses in Crown Heights, we're often like you have a driveway between two houses, and the driveway is open to the street. If you have a Tzuras HaPesach over there, then it means, in other words, that you could have, if you had put down your matzah beforehand, as people usually do before Pesach, and made an Erev Chatzeres between you and your neighbor, then you'd actually be allowed to carry in that driveway on Shabbos. And Yos, you didn't, you're not, but nevertheless, at least the hardware is there, so to speak. Only the software is missing, if you want to put it that way. Therefore, to save Sfarim from a fire or flood or what have you, you would be allowed to. As far as having a goy carry them, that you could even take them through Rosh Hashanah.